Let's begin.
This is the boss.
I'm the boss.
And the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine.
And welcome in, everybody. It is the Boss and the Gloss. I'm sitting next to my Monday night delight, Carla Dawson, the Gloss. How are you?
I'm good. This is our first show of 2020.
First show of 2020.
We're breaking in the new decade.
And we are glad to welcome back. Jose,
yes!
Partida, ¿cómo estás tú?
Muy bien, ¿y ustedes? It's
Yo
been over
bien.
A month since
I
we've been together.
I know you have been avoiding us. I'm really
I
glad
have.
You're back.
Well, I have been avoiding
you. Jose, you don't really realize this, but we were in here broadcasting on Black Monday, the day that all the pink slips are given away, and you were not here. And there were whispers, social media was abuzz, that maybe you had fallen prey to Black Monday. Not Jose.
Luckily not. I'm here, ready for another year.
And the producer that took your spot, he was not used to me breaking down, you know, when he got the music going. He was not sure what was happening.
He was confused?
When she started dancing.
I think it really upset him. The visual was too much.
Well, he pulled out his wallet and offered a couple $1 bills.
Oh, no.
I thought that was inappropriate. It didn't feel right. I mean, this is a company.
So that's why I'm back.
We need you back.
The other guy's gone. Yeah. He got the Black Monday pink slip. He deserved it. In Houston, there's been a little bit of a pink slip today.
Yeah, a couple.
Romeo Crennel gone as the defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, and we will unpack that. That's big news here in Houston, Texas.
And then you told me a term I didn't know today. Their capologist is
Excuse
also
me?
Gone. I that was a new one to me.
Yes, a capologist. They have let go the guy who maintains all the numbers.
Jack
and that's
Olson,
a big job,
yeah.
Actually, in this modern era. Because not only do you have to calculate the cap as it is today, but you've got to project it out over time. You know, players who are coming up, you have to project their contracts expiring and keep track of what the salary trends are. It's a big undertaking. And yes, Bill O'Brien here, head coach, general manager, offensive coordinator of the Texans, has decided to let go of his capologist and Romeo Crennel out as was defensive coordinator of the Texans.
And in is Anthony Weaver, the former D-line coach of the Texans, who will now step into that role.
Former D-line coach, former free agent signee and player for the Texans.
Yes, played for 2 years in
Houston. So sort of a homegrown guy.
Yeah, interesting. Okay,
well,
here we go.
And we had big games yesterday, conference championships. We will unpack that. We will ask the question, is Patrick Mahomes now the greatest player in all of sports? More of that when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And I think all of our jaws were dropping yesterday at Patrick Mahomes' play over the Titans. Just an incredible performance, both running and passing. I don't know if I've seen a complete package like he demonstrated yesterday. I mean, it was...
Well, we kind of did see it the week before.
You're living here in Houston, Texas.
At the expense of the Texans, yes.
Yeah, certainly from that sort of first quarter on against the Texans, we saw it. And then he turned it on again, down 10 points to the Titans. And he made every throw. He ran when he needed the run. When we compare him to Lamar Jackson, my reaction always is, what I love about Mahomes is that he's a pass-first guy. Mm-hmm. He'll run if it's there and if it's the right step for the team. I worry Lamar Jackson likes to run and then use the throw also. But Mahomes has all of it. He has great field vision, great sense of timing, great ability to put the ball in any spot. And then, yes, his mobility was very good. I mean, his long run, it was 27 yards. Just tiptoeing down the sideline, turned everybody's heads yesterday. An amazing, amazing performance.
And, you know, not to be missed in all that is his corazón. Let's talk about the heart of this guy. Like, he is 24 years old, and he can fire up that sideline. Like, he has got his team. He has got his locker room. At any point, you know, 2 weekends ago against Houston, yesterday against the Titans, you know, twice they were down double digits against Tennessee. Tennessee had beaten them previously. The Texans had beaten them previously. He has the ability to put that team on his back and encourage them to do what they need to do to win. That's a huge thing for such a young guy at 24.
Well, by every metric, he has all the intangibles, as you noted, off the field, as a leader amongst the mm-hmm. team. There's a great deal of respect.
Yeah.
When they've faced other crises, when they've been behind, he's the guy walking around.
Pumping everybody up,
getting that team fired up. And look, the Chiefs, as a mid-market, or I guess I would call it a Midwestern team, you assume a wholesome nature about them. They're the Kansas City Chiefs, right? And Patrick Mahomes is that.
Yes,
he's the Boy Scout that really is not the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs have taken some risks on guys of questionable character. Tyreek Hill, of course. They had Kareem Hunt,
know,
and they
I
had to let him go.
I can't stop thinking about that yesterday with every reception.
Sure, but Frank Clark, LeSean McCoy, yep. All of them have
Kareem Hunt, who's not there anymore.
Yeah, they have some checkered history guys on that team. But Patrick Mahomes is the Boy Scout. He's the guy at the center of the band, and he's done it exceptionally well. Now, when he joined the Kansas City Chiefs, he certainly joined a team where all the pieces were there. When you think about Andy Reid and all that he could offer to this young quarterback, certainly Patrick Mahomes fell into the right situation.
I mean, he did. And this is what I'm going to say. I want to be clear that this does not take away from his greatness on the field and off the field, because I really do think he is super special and with athleticism and his intangibles. But look how he came into the league versus right here in our backyard, Deshaun Watson. Two equally talented quarterbacks in my book. So Patrick Mahomes comes in. He's got Andy Reid first as a coach. And like every coach says, you know, yeah, we're going to have our guys sit, our first round quarterback sit and learn from the vet. Never happens. Did happen for Patrick Mahomes. He sat behind Alex Smith, who is a good quarterback.
I mean,
Alex Smith is a great quarterback. And he really sat for three quarters of the season learning from Alex Smith. And that was a great situation. You add that to, well, Andy Reid is your head coach, actually sitting and learning with a tablet behind Alex Smith. And then the embarrassment of riches that are surrounding Patrick Mahomes, and that would be Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, at the time Kareem Hunt, Sammy Watkins, Damian Williams. I mean, they're stacked. It's really impressive. And again, I just want to be clear, I'm not taking away. He is great. And he was given the perfect situation to succeed, because you look at how Deshaun Watson came into the league. You heard Bill O'Brien. He's going to sit, you know, learn the first year. That lasted one half of game one.
That's right.
And he was behind Tom Savage, who? Yeah, exactly. Tom Savage, he sat behind, didn't have many weapons on offense. He had Bill O'Brien, who is the OC, general manager, everything else, can't manage time. I mean, the whole thing was a mess. And so you just look at, wow, it really does matter. It does depend on the situation you can come into, because imagine Deshaun Watson in Kansas City.
Well, when I look at Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, it was the perfect quarterback in the perfect situation. Mm-hmm. And you need both, mm-hmm. right? Deshaun Watson is a seemingly perfect quarterback, opportunity to be a perfect, great quarterback, but not in a great situation. If you were to look at all the other young quarterbacks who have come out over the last few years and you were to put them into that Kansas City situation, I don't think they would take as much advantage of it as Patrick Mahomes.
Agreed.
Except for maybe Deshaun Watson. I mean, go down the list. Carson Wentz, Jared Goff,
yep.
Dak Prescott. These guys, well, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, those guys are all young quarterbacks, all drafted high. If they'd gone to the Chiefs, I don't think they would have done what Patrick Mahomes has done. I think he's that exceptional. The one guy who I think might be able to have done what Patrick Mahomes did is Deshaun Watson, because Deshaun has that mobility. He has that ability to escape, to play the Houdini.
And imagine if he had time like Mahomes has behind that amazing O-line.
And then he has that throw. I mean, he has the ability to throw the ball
he's
deep.
He's not afraid to go deep.
He can heat at 70 yards just as Mahomes can. And if you have 4-2 guys running deep and you can move around and buy yourself some time, eventually one of them is going to run free, and that's where Mahomes hits them. I mean, Mahomes makes the deep route. He makes the short route. He makes it all. You know, it's funny to think back on it because we're going to be at Radio Row week after next. I remember the first time we laid eyes on Patrick Mahomes. We were at Radio Row here in Houston, Texas.
Sure.
And Lee Steinberg, who is his agent, and he was a comeback story himself, of course. He was the agent to the stars, Warren Moon, Troy Aikman, and others. Then he had his issues with substance abuse. He was making his comeback, and the first big guy he'd been able to sign as an agent who was making his comeback was Patrick Mahomes. And he brought Mahomes down the way at Radio Row. We met him, and I saw this kid, and he was no bigger than I. He was thin as a rail. He was probably 6'1", 6'2". I mean, I'm 6'1". He just didn't impress me physically at all. And at that point, it was before the combine, before all the action and all the chances for the scouts to really see him and weigh him and watch him throw. Most of the mock drafts had him going in the third round. Lee Steinberg said, no, this guy's going to go in the first round when it's all said and done. And sure enough, he did go in the first round.
And hi, he was like number 7.
He was exceptional and has gone on to be perhaps the best quarterback in the league right now. So it's just funny. Back to your point about 1 year off. What I think that first year enabled him to do was to get some weight on his body, to learn the game.
Yes.
By the time he came in, the game was slower than it would have been if he'd been thrown to the wolves early on.
Right. And all those pieces that I mentioned were in place.
Yep.
You know, all that O-line was there. That wasn't built. You know, I mean, look at Houston. They just actually got a legit left tackle this year with Laremy Tunsil. Had to give up 2 first-round draft picks for that. But, you know, yeah, he had the pieces in place, and he was able to learn that system, learn from Andy Reid, Alex Smith. It's been great. It's been great for him, and he's talented and knows how to use that to his advantage.
Okay, let's look at the other side of the ball.
And what a quarterback difference. Not the 49ers. You're meaning the other side
of
the
Chiefs. No, I want to go to the Titans for a minute.
Oh, the Titans, okay.
The Titans, I have to give them a lot of credit for what they've done.
Oh, yeah.
And it is interesting. We're sitting here in Houston, Texas, and when the Texans lost to the Chiefs, it felt embarrassing and devastating. Here we sit a week later, the Titans lost to the Chiefs. And somehow, to me, it felt like it was a very respectable loss. I mean, the Titans came out. They executed a good game plan.
They had a double-digit lead twice.
They executed very well, and Patrick Mahomes became Patrick Mahomes and took the win. But the loss feels different. It feels more respectable for the Titans than it did for the Texans. And I think part of it was,
there's not a 5 handle on the final score. That could be one.
The 5 handle certainly hurts the cause.
I mean, 31 points for the Texans, 31 points should win you a ball game.
Well, and I think part of it is everything went the Texans' way. They had this big chance. They were up 21-0. They had a chance to go for it on 4th and short and maybe get up 28-0. And they let that big opportunity slip away when they kicked the field goal and everything turned. It's just that it felt like the Texans really were on the cusp. The Titans never were that far ahead. So emotionally,
sure.
Look, I think the Chiefs were favored, or they were favored, and we all thought they were going to win over both teams. But clearly, the Texans' loss in Houston, Texas, felt like it was a much more devastating, dismal, embarrassing setback.
And all of that is 100% true because it was. It really was. It was a defense that just could not adjust. They could never get that momentum to swing back over. But you know, in true Bill O'Brien fashion, the best gift that Bill O'Brien got was the Astros scandal, because it was the day after that debacle and all that talk shifted. So
he didn't have to face the music.
No. No.
All right, when we come back, we'll break down the other conference championship game, and we're also going to look at all the recent coaching hires in the NFL. We'll take a look at which team has fared the best. All that and more when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, everybody. It is The Boss and the Gloss. And so the other game that we've not yet talked about, the 49ers' big win over the Packers. I was not surprised that the 49ers won at home and with their ability to control the line of scrimmage. What I was surprised is how dominating they looked, how they really control both sides of the ball. I know all about their defensive front and all the first-round picks and D Ford and Bosa and all that, but they really looked like they just owned the Packers. The Packers looked like they were a bottom-of-the-heap team. It was almost embarrassing to watch that from the Packers' perspective.
No, it really was. And the score really doesn't dictate how dominant the 49ers were throughout the game.
No. And that Jimmy G could throw eight passes and only complete six passes and yet win, and they would score as many points as they did, that's preposterous. It's not even possible. That's just bizarre. I think I heard a stat that the last time anybody won a playoff game completing only six passes was Bob Greasy back with the Dolphins.
Oh, my gosh.
That's in the era when they could hand the ball off to Larry Zonka.
I wasn't even born yet.
You weren't even born, of course. They had Jim Kick and Mercury Morris and Larry Zonka.
Oh, gosh, where are you pulling
Bob
these
Bob Greasy
names
was completing
from?
Six crazy passes, and they were on their way to the Super Bowl. That was a different era. And it came back yesterday. I don't even know how you describe that. I don't even know that it seemed that now it raises the question, well, is Jimmy G ready for the Super Bowl? Because you're going to have to throw the ball more to keep up with Patrick Mahomes. Surely.
Jimmy G is ready.
You have confidence because of the way he could light it up or has lit it up against teams like the Saints earlier this year.
But I've also seen, yes, but I've also seen him, like the first Seattle game.
Yep.
That was in San Francisco. He kind of lost the game for them, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've seen both sides of it with Jimmy G. What I think, why I have confidence, and I don't know if it's so much in him as I have it in Kyle Shanahan. Put something in place based on, you know, all your analytics, all your coaching, all your scouting that you do. If it works, don't change it, Bill O'Brien. Stick with what you know. And guess what? It was working last night. Look what Raheem Mostert did last night. That was absolutely incredible. They could not, Green Bay could not stop the run.
Yep.
So why would you not keep going to it? And the one X factor that can go either way with San Francisco is Jimmy G. He is more than a serviceable quarterback. He is a good quarterback. Is he fully reliable? No, because he came to them with seven starts out of New England. Why? Because he was behind Tom Brady. So he's got the mechanics. I believe he's got what it takes, but he's not consistent. And Kyle Shanahan, at this level, when you're in a championship game, your division championship, you are not going to put the ball in the hands of a guy that could go either way when your running game is working. And, you know, their tight ends were fabulous at blocking the edges.
Yep.
I mean, I've never seen – that was textbook. Every single offensive coordinator should be looking at that. That was amazing.
Yeah, the way they created space in the running game was exceptional. And I'm sure a lot of offensive coordinators will be looking at that. I mean, they ran the ball better than I've seen a playoff team run the ball in a long time. It wasn't just sort of, well, that's because they have Derrick Henry and Derrick Henry runs well. I mean, he did run that well against the Patriots a couple weeks ago.
But seven teams in 5 years.
And I credit it to the scheme of the running game, not so much the great performance of a Derrick Henry as we saw a couple weeks ago against the Patriots. That's what was so intriguing.
Yeah.
Is that Mostert is not anybody who turned your head, and yet it was really an effective running game that day for the 49ers. Now, on the other side of the ball, their defense continues to impress. They are stocked with talent, both in the front seven and in the secondary. I mean, Sherman's still playing well.
Two interceptions for Rodgers last night. Wow.
Yeah, and Sherman is still playing well, although it was fun to see the dust up with Darrell Revis, who notes that Sherman isn't really a shutdown corner. He didn't travel with the number one receiver, et cetera, et cetera. But all that said, the defensive front of the 49ers, here's just going to be fascinating to watch, is can the 49ers front four put pressure and, you have to say and, contain Mahomes?
Right.
Because if the 49ers front four can do that, both put pressure and contain Mahomes, then yeah, the 49ers have a chance. We haven't seen anybody really do that. But the 49ers front four, they're all a step faster and a step a little bit stronger, more effective at rushing the passer than anybody the Chiefs have seen all year.
I think the game could be really interesting, the Super Bowl, because what I have seen watching San Francisco this year, they come out of the gates strong.
Yep.
And, you know, they had a shutout with Green Bay in the first half. And then they let – I won't even say they let Green Bay back in, but it did get to be a little more interesting points.
Right.
There were several, you know, consecutive possessions where Green Bay scored and San Francisco didn't. They did that with both Seattle games this year. And it just was like, oh, why can't you just put this away and keep it away? So their fast start, slower in the second half where they tend to let the opponent back in. The Chiefs, the opposite. If you look at what happened against Tennessee yesterday, Houston the day before, they come out slow. I mean, Houston was up 24-0 in the first quarter.
Yep.
And then they turn it on in the second half. So you've got strong halves for both teams. It'll be interesting to see how they adjust. But I will say with Kansas City, that, you know, San Francisco owns the number one defense in the NFL. Kansas, Patrick Mahomes has not been up against that yet, which will be interesting. It'll be really interesting. And they haven't seen a Patrick Mahomes yet. Closest thing is Russell Wilson, and they've been really tight games with the Seahawks.
That's right. I think Wilson is the closest thing mm-hmm. they've seen. It's going to be a great game. It's notable that Vegas is basically calling a toss-up right now. That just doesn't happen.
With a slight edge to the Chiefs, yeah.
A slight edge, but that may wiggle back and forth. I think that the Chiefs coming into this, well, yesterday's games, the Chiefs were certainly going to be considered favorites, but because the 49ers were so dominant against the Packers, it caught everyone's attention a little bit. I think it opened up the idea.
Including Aaron Rodgers.
Well, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, poor guy. And now here he sits, he's age 36, and people are talking about the window closing on him. How many more shots will he get? I'm not going to say the window's closed on him. That's a hot topic of the day. The thing that is so
reaction Monday.
Yeah,
so.
There's so notable about the NFL is that what you think one year, everything can change the next year. So my best example of this is when I was reading a lot about Kyle Shanahan today and John Lynch and the extraordinary job they've done and how this 49ers team has been built so well and how they're so young that they're going to be very, very good for a sustained period of time. When I was reading that article, I felt like it was 1 year ago this week.
They were 4-12.
I was reading about the Rams, is my point.
Sure. It,
1 year ago this week.
With Sean McVay.
Sean McVay for Kyle Shanahan. That's whatever. He's the new. Kyle Shanahan is this year Sean McVay. He's the genius this year. And the team, the 49ers, are going to have a sustained run just like the Rams were. Well, what a difference a year makes. And now Wade Phillips is gone, and Todd Gurley's not the athlete that he was, and Jared Goff doesn't look like a franchise quarterback anymore, and now they've overpaid for all those guys.
And they didn't even make the postseason.
Things change in the NFL. All that to say, little hopeful thought for Aaron Rodgers. If they pick up a couple of pieces, if they get him some talent,
they need more than
targets,
a couple pieces, honestly, for him.
But they were one game away from the Super Bowl.
Yep.
One game away, they don't have the weapons. They didn't have the weapons this year. Davante Adams was there yesterday, but they need a couple more weapons and maybe a couple extra pieces on the defensive line, and things can change. We'll see. You know what? Their narrative that the Rams, I mean, that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, that the window is closed, it may be true, and if I were a betting man, I'd probably bet, yeah, we won't see Aaron Rodgers in a championship game. But I hold out this thought. I am surprised that there's that much narrative that way. I might say that the Saints are closer to the end of their window
Drew Brees
than the Packers right now. Drew Brees.
Or is he 40?
Is I think 40, and I think that he is a guy who, well, his arm strength doesn't look like it's there.
Right.
He is throwing a lot more shorter passes. Aaron Rodgers still threw some extraordinary passes yesterday.
He did.
And he throws it from unconventional positions, and his accuracy is amazing. I think a couple of pieces and a couple of breaks, and who knows, the Packers could be right there again.
But you know what a difference a year makes? Can we just stop and pause for this fact? A year ago, Jimmy G's out with a torn ACL.
Yep.
A year ago, Tom Brady is hoisting his sixth Super Bowl trophy.
Yep.
Fast forward, Tom Brady is on his couch watching Jimmy G win a trip to the Super Bowl.
Yep. Maybe.
Wow.
Let me rephrase it. Tom Brady was on a couch in Las Vegas watching the game because he'd been watching the UFC before. And he's talking to your man, Mark Davis.
I know.
And now all the rumors are that Tom Brady's going to the Raiders.
Steamy in Vegas. What happens in Vegas may not stay in Vegas.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Joel Blank. He will fill us in on all things Houston, the Rockets, the Astros, the Texans.
Houston, we've got a problem.
Joel Blank will answer all your questions when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, we got a real treat. It is Joel Blank joining us here on SB Nation Radio. Joe is a host on KFNC Houston. And Joel, welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Always a pleasure to be with you guys. Hope you're doing good on this Monday evening.
Well, we are. We are living in Houston, and it does feel like Houston is the center of the world, sports-wise, at least for a couple of weeks. We want to start with the Texans, because today Bill O'Brien made the decision to fire Romeo Crennel, the defensive coordinator. What were your thoughts? Any surprise there?
No, I said that the day after the Chiefs game that the scapegoat in this whole thing was going to be Romeo Crennel, because Cal McNair, the owner that has taken over for his dad, that when his dad passed away, has yet to be seen or heard from since he took over control of the team. And it just seems like Bill O'Brien is running amok with an attitude like he's invincible. And, you know, the one person that enjoyed the Astros story last week was Bill O'Brien, because it deflected what should have been, you know, a huge target on his fanny, because fans were crying for him to be removed from either the coaching head coaching position and or the general manager's position, because they're tired of all of the mistakes, the slip-ups, and everything that's gone wrong with this franchise. And now to use Crennel as a scapegoat, it's funny. They also got rid of their 13-year contract negotiator, so you know that he's going to be the scapegoat for the fact that you gave up a ton of draft picks for Laremy Tunsil, but you neglected to sign him to an extension. So you may lose him, and he may walk if you don't just fill out a blank check for him and overpay, because you didn't take care of that. You gave away two big extensions during the season to players that could have hit the open market and probably saved you some money, and Whitney Mercilus being one of them and Nick Martin being the other one, their center, making them both top six paid players at their position in the league, when their stats don't back it up. So the Texan situation is a mess. I think Anthony Weaver is much like the mold of Mike Vrabel. He's going to be an up-and-comer. A lot of people speaking highly of him. In a couple of years, he'll be considered for head coaching positions. So I don't think they got a bad guy. I just think the whole process was bad and how they got to it.
Yeah, Joel, I agree with you completely. And I'm frustrated with the lack of any sort of anything from Cal McNair. Are we going to hear from him, and why aren't we hearing from him? Is it just because he says, hey, we're worth $3 billion. Everything's fine in my book. What's going on there? What's the real deal?
Yeah, Carl, you know, and you and I kind of talked about this mm-hmm. the other day mm-hmm. in the office. And the thing is that, you know, I don't think you want a Jerry Jones. I don't think you want a Daniel Snyder to be the front person and owner of your franchise, because now you're hearing from him way too much. They can't get enough of the microphone. The things they say are ridiculous. But what you do want from a fan base and from a city that supports this team like no other is answers. And if you're going to say that Bill O'Brien's going to be my guy going forward, at least just come out and say that.
Right.
And if you're not, then come out and say, you know what, we're going to scrutinize every aspect of this franchise in the offseason, because that was unacceptable and we need to get to the bottom of it. But at least say something, because everybody deserves, they don't deserve the truth all the time, but they deserve some kind of an explanation and some form of answers, especially now today when you go ahead and make moves. You still didn't accompany those moves with anybody speaking on why they were made. Mm-hmm. And was it their choice or yours? Because the fact of the matter is that Romeo Crennel is out as defensive coordinator, but the stories here are saying he's going to be retained within the organization if he chooses to. So that tells me the Patriots way is alive and well in Houston, and that they're going to protect the guys that they brought in. They may remove them from a position like they did with Crennel for Vrabel 2 years ago, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that he's going to be without work, and he's probably still going to get a paycheck. So why? And that's what everybody wants to know, that no one can get a straight answer from Cal McNair or anybody else, is why are they doing what they're doing, and what is the status of Bill O'Brien?
We're talking to Joel Blank. He's a show host on KFNC Houston. Let me ask you about the general manager position, because, of course, when the Texans let go of Brian Gaines, the presumption was that they were going to bring in Nick Caserio. Mm-hmm. That obviously didn't work out. O'Brien's been acting GM. Will the Texans get a different GM this offseason?
David, I don't think so. And I think that, you know, if you look at whatever website, NFL.com, Pro Football Talk, everybody says that whether he has refused to take the title to this point, but everybody said that Bill O'Brien is very happy with the way things are running on that side of the operation, and that they don't foresee any changes to be made. Now, obviously, they made a change with their contract negotiator. But overall, when you look at the moves that were made and the fact that O'Brien sits at the top of a pyramid where everybody seems to be behind, down below him on the pyramid, and the only one above him is Cal McNair, who's basically let him do whatever he wants. As long as he likes doing and feels like he can pull off both jobs, he's going to continue to do that. And it's mesmerizing to me, because even take a guy like in Cleveland, John Dorsey, he took the fall for hiring Freddie Kitchens. But if you look at the personnel moves that John Dorsey made, not only with a Chiefs team now headed to the Super Bowl, where he was responsible for basically every player on that roster up until the last year, to what he did in Cleveland in getting OBJ teamed up with Landry, with some of the guys he traded for, Olivier Vernon from the Giants and others. He constructed one heck of a roster. He just hired the wrong coach. A guy like John Dorsey in Houston would be a guy that could just matriculate the roster and massage it just in certain areas where they do have some holes, and also still capitalize on the good roster of players that they have, mm-hmm. so that he could make things better. But Bill O'Brien's ego seemingly won't let that go. They won't consider something like that. And so they're still going to have a guy that can kind of half-ass it on both sides of it. He's not doing a great job as a general manager. He's not doing a great job as a head coach. But he's doing a great job pulling the wool over the eyes of the owner.
No, it's very true, Joel. Gosh, you bring great points. And we talked about the same thing in the last segment, that Bill O'Brien was the happiest person in the city of Houston for the Astros scandal, which, yep. Let's flip that on over there, because you are the expert on all things Houston. And, honey, we have a problem. However, so Kyle Hendricks of the Chicago Cubs comes out and says Astros aren't the only ones cheating. It's just, is it legal or illegal with the sign stealing? Joel, what do you think is going on in Major League Baseball? And is it the type of thing where we are living in a world of technology that just keeps getting better and better, and sabermetrics is such a huge part of the game? Should they just let technology and this sign stealing be open to everybody? Because they're all doing it. It's just whether it's done with technology or whether it's not. What's your take? What do you think?
I think that's the problem, Carla. I think the problem is everybody's been stealing signs and trying to steal and get an advantage since the game was created. Mm-hmm. The problem is now using technology in order to take it to the next level. The league just doesn't like. But the fact of the matter is, it's just the progression of stealing signs and trying to get an advantage. And the old saying, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Right. Well, it seems like everybody was cheating. And then Black Jack McDowell, the former Cy Young Award winner, coming out last week and saying, hey, in the early 90s, Tony La Russa mm-hmm. had a light system in the corner of the Gatorade side in center field and a camera set up in his office with one man stealing the signs. And then if he was unequivocally knowing what the sign was, green light was fastball, red light was curveball, and it was in the batter's eye. So that's 1991. So, and that was technology too. But the league is a victim of their own attempts to advance technology-wise. The league is the one that allowed the iPads in the dugout. They allowed the technology to be used for scouting purposes. But with that comes the opportunity to very easily access and then process data that can be used for other things, not just, hey, if a pitcher comes in, let's look at his delivery and let's look at things in his last five appearances. We saw Aaron Judge in the Yankees mm-hmm. Astros series with an iPad in hand and then pictures in hand.
Pictures.
Don't tell me that was just to see, you know, what he might have been doing at the plate. That was exactly just a different extension of the cheating that's going on in baseball.
So what then? Let's assume that there are a dozen teams that have been cheating at the same scale as the Astros. And as all that comes out, not every team can be punished with first and second round draft picks eliminated. I mean, where does this end? How do you think it unfolds? It's a really tough thing for Major League Baseball to address if it gets to be that widespread.
Yeah, it really is, David. I think one of the main things that Rob Manfred tried to do is he put a gag order on everybody because he's trying to protect the credibility of the league.
Yeah.
We saw what the referee scandal in the NBA with Tim Donaghy mm-hmm. did to the NBA mm-hmm. and how they tried to kibosh that. We saw all the different Patriots scandals and how the league tried to kibosh that so that it didn't damage the reputation and the credibility of a league. I think that's what Manfred's trying to do here. He doesn't want the players talking. He doesn't want the organizations talking. He wants this to be just the one-and-done situation that reprimands the entire league at once by saying, if you come out and say anything or do anything so that this continues with a bad look for the league, you will be punished accordingly. And it's put some fear into some organizations and players, but now you're starting to see more players come out on their own and make a comment here, a comment there. But I think that if you want to say, how do we go forward from here, use the technology to allow the catcher and the pitcher to communicate so that they don't have to worry about signs. Do it like football did with the earpieces and the helmets to avoid sign stealing. Find some way, whether it's a wristband or some form of technology that allows pitcher and catcher to communicate without fingers between the legs of the catcher and third base coaches giving signs or signs in the dugout. Because if you utilize technology correctly that way, then there won't be any videotaping and stealing of signs and ways to manipulate the entire way the game is played. And hopefully you can put a lot of this to bed. But use the technology for the betterment of the league instead of allowing teams to use it to the detriment of the overall league and their reputation.
Joel, what about Boston? So we know that Alex Cora, he's out as manager, and it seems to be for his role in spearheading what went on in Houston. And J.D. Martinez has come out and said, I want this investigation done because you'll see that nothing here happened in Boston in 2018. What do you think? Do you think something went on in Boston?
I think it went on in Boston. I think the more puzzling thing is there's been so many things that's gone on in with the Yankees so far, and everybody seems fearful to poke the bear that no one is willing to come out and say it. Jeff Passan, the national writer for ESPN, had so much passion and vigor about the Astros trading for Osuna with domestic violence. But then Herman, the pitcher of the Yankees, gets 81-game suspension for domestic violence, and he won't lift a pen, type anything on his keyboard, or say anything on the air. And I think that the Red Sox and Yankees are guilty. I think they're guilty just as the Astros and so many other teams are. And the thing is that Cora was the spearhead. The interesting thing, too, is if you go back and listen to, and we had on our show a soundbite when the Yankees and the Red Sox were in London a year ago, and he said, Cora came out and said that the biggest free agent acquisition the Yankees made in the offseason was getting Carlos Beltran as their bench coach, mm-hmm. which already is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But then he said he knows he has the tools. He knows what to do. And he made a couple of other just subtle comments that now when you go back and listen to that, you go, oh, I get it. Because all the Astros guys knew how to do it. Now when Beltran goes to the Yankees and Cora goes to the Red Sox, it was like, why wouldn't I bring this system with me? Because I'm going to look like a hero if it works and we have an advantage. And so I think in the report, the two names that were mentioned, the only player mentioned was Beltran, and the spearhead of the whole thing was Cora. Cora may never work in Major League Baseball again, whether he wants to or not, or whatever the ban is. And unfortunately, this may keep Carlos Beltran from getting in the Hall of Fame because it happened while he was a player.
Mm-hmm.
So as illustrious a career as he had, this could really affect him in terms of his legacy. And I think from a Red Sox perspective, Manfred's going to be as careful or more careful and meticulous in this investigation as he was with the Astros, because if it shows that Cora brought it over and it was effective, now he's going to have some even more severe penalties. I think no matter what Hinch and Luno got, I think Cora's suspension will be more. I think he has to do that, because if you read the 9-page report, as I think we all have, mm-hmm. you realize that Cora was not Hinch, not Luno. Cora was the guy that kind of took this from fruition and then kept adding to it, trying to take more advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. Tough stuff, though. Appreciate you joining us. Joel Blanks, thanks so much.
You guys have a great night.
Thanks, Joel.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And Carla, it was great to talk to Joel Blank. So interesting to hear his perspective. And really the presumption that when Carlos Beltran went to the Yankees, he brought this same sort of system for stealing signs to the Yankees. And yet you hear CeCe Sabathia really somber and sad that he had a championship stolen from him, which would be totally disingenuous if, in fact, Beltran was helping them with the whole system. I mean, the Yankees go down on this, it will be three of the most significant franchises of the last 5 years. I just think it's a mess. But do you think the Yankees were equally as involved?
I do, 100%. Because they have jumped way too heavily onto this Astros-hating train. You know, meaning, you know, you look at Jose Altuve, who his walk-off home run to take the Astros this year to the World Series off of Aroldis Chapman.
Aroldis Chapman.
You could say, hey, they were stealing signs. Or if you're a baseball fan, you can go, could it possibly be that Aroldis Chapman made the dumb decision to throw an 87-mile-per-hour slider in consecutive pitches? And he hit the second one out of the park.
Right.
So, obviously, if you are not from Houston or an Astros fan, you're thinking they stole the pitches. But let's look at it stole the signs. Let's look at other things that are happening. And the Yankees hate Jose Altuve. In the ALCS in Yankee Stadium, they were yelling F Altuve every time he came up to bat. So there are things going on. There's a lot of bad blood. I think the Yankees are piling on the fact that the media is based in New York. They love the Yankees, and they're being protected for now. But I think, yes, Carlos Beltran was with them. Of course they had stuff going on. We have pictures of Aaron Judge in the dugout with an iPad. We have pictures of Aaron Judge in the dugout with photos. So it's going to get ugly. The can of worms has been opened.
Yeah, it feels like we've just tapped into this, and it will be a story that we're going to have to live with for many, many more months.
Yeah, sadly, I think that's right.
All right, we're going to shift gears back to the NFL when we return. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.